Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. On this podcast, Pastor David Crank helps us understand that God's Word is still relevant and has all the wisdom and guidance to help us figure out the crazy ups and downs in life. If you want to hear practical and inspiring biblical teachings, be sure to subscribe so that you can hear the latest message every week. And wherever you're listening from today, we believe God is going to speak to you and bless your life. Here's Pastor David with the message.
Come on, give it up for Mel this morning. Come on, Faith Church, every campus. Good to see you. I got Ferguson up here, Welland up here, Earth City online. I can see everybody. You can be seated today and look at your neighbor and tell them, did you get Botox? Because you look great. You look great. I've noticed that people love it when you ask them, have you lost weight? How many of y'all love to hear that? It's like, oh, yeah, not really, but, you know, I just love it. Today we're going to have a good time. I started reading a book recently called Let Them by Mel Robbins. A lot of you have never heard of her. How many of you have never heard of her? Raise all campus ever heard of her. She's like America's number one podcast right now, 28 million followers a week. It's pretty amazing. She just reminds me of just like a friend who could help you understand just who you are. And at church, a lot of times preachers come and they're always yelling the whole time. And I stopped yelling a long time ago. I do like little minutes of yelling, like weak point, yell loud, right? But I like to just talk. For one, I speak so much that my voice would be gone. But two, I really want you to comprehend today. The Bible said you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. And Let Them is a phenomenal book. It's not a Christian book, but it's got a lot of advice in it that's really helpful. So when I grew up, I know what you're thinking, you know, did you grow up? And not totally, but I'm trying to in some areas. And I grew up and I had a very domineering dad who I love big time. I want to go on record and say a lot of you guys have heard me say so many great things about my dad because there's so many great things to be said. But like with anybody, if your dad had issues and your mom had issues, then you probably have issues and then now you spread that. It's kind of like your genes. If you were ugly, you know, it's probably because your grandma was ugly, right? So it's in your genes. And so my dad, very domineering, very controlling. And I think now, after years of research, I think at the root of it was he was afraid that I would move away, that I would leave him, that he was actually kind of codependent upon me. But at the same time, he manipulated me in certain ways. In fact, here would be in a way as an adult. One guy, there was a guy at our church, his name was Larry, and my dad called me and said, hey, I called Larry and asked him if he would do something for me, and he said, what is it? And he said, I hung up the phone, because you shouldn't ask what is it, and I knew, watch the manipulation, I knew when I called you, you wouldn't ask what is it, you would go, yeah, sure. Okay, so I don't really realize that it's kind of grooming me or setting me up for, hey, I want to do what he says, and that's a boy. Good boy, because there was a part of me, and it's still there, to where I really, really like to be affirmed. Now, some people have a lot of empathy, and I do, and then some people have no empathy at all. It's like, I could care less. Raise your hand if you're the I could care less kind of person. There'll be like three or four of you. Come on, every campus. How many more like me, and you just can't stand it if people aren't happy with you? You're like, man, I can't handle it. And so now I've got all these trauma bonds and father wounds and even mother wounds from trying to make everybody happy. Meanwhile, I'm not truly happy myself because I can't really be who I want to be because I'm too busy being who they want me to be. Raise your hand if that makes sense. And so Let Them is kind of the book is like this. When people get mad at you, let them. If they leave you, let them. For far too long, we've allowed other people's happiness to control our happiness. Now, by no stretch of the imagination am I trying to tell you that you be you and be a jerk and who cares what other people think. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you have one life to live and you need to live that life to the maximum because Jesus said, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. So let me, am I helping? Am I making sense so far? No, it's early, but let them. So if you think about this, the story in the Bible, there was a guy in Luke, and Jesus preached a story about the prodigal son, right? Remember the prodigal son said, hey, dad, give me all that I have. I'm going away right now. And the dad didn't say, please don't go. Please don't go, girl. No, no, no. He didn't say, oh, stay. You're making a wrong decision. I want to try to manipulate it. He just let them go. And in a loving way, eventually, the prodigal, you know the story, he goes out, he spends all that he has, and parties like crazy. He goes to Vegas, where everything that happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, unless it's Fenario. Come on, somebody. And then it comes back, and then it's just, I do that just to keep the religious people out of the church, because we need your seat. And so now he lets him, but it says when he was a long way off, the father saw him. Notice that a father loves you and sees you, this is the good news, when we're way off. And he, when he did come back, he let him do it, but he also didn't say, hey, I told you, I'm going to give you the cold shoulder. I told you this was going to happen. No, he put a ring on his finger, a robe on his back, and he said, kill the fatted calf. It's going to be a party. So here's, if Jesus is preaching, let them, then we certainly should. Well, then let them. People get mad at you? Have you ever walked in a room and nobody said anything, but you could feel the tension in the air? Anybody ever felt an attitude? If you don't raise your hand, I'm assuming it's you that's throwing the tude. Okay? So you feel the attitude, because people that are narcissistic or have narcissistic tendencies or are manipulators, they tend to weigh you down, making you feel bad. In fact, you can bend over backwards and be like, oh, I got to go to grandma's birthday party, and so I'm going to leave college and drive all night and get there. And then when you finally get there and you can only stay for 3 hours, your mom says, well, you might as well not even came, because you're only staying for 3 hours. And you're like, man, I just can't make anybody happy. And at some point in your life, you've heard this term. If mama ain't happy, if daddy ain't happy, let's make it fair. Ain't nobody happy. The fact is, mama might not be able to be happy. Mama might be unhappy because her mama was unhappy and daddy was unhappy. But you can't say, well, if mom's happy tomorrow, then I'll be happy tomorrow. No, you have one life to live, and to have peace and tranquility and to enjoy your life, you've got to let people be who they are, and you've got to let you be who you are. Come on, somebody. Fairview Heights making some noise up in there today. So, what happens? At some point in my life, and this is a little bit of a therapy class, not necessarily for me, but for some people going through this. I remember when I was about 30, in my 30s. Actually, let's back up. Let's go to like 28. Let's start when I was two. Well, when I was two, no. When I was about in my 20s, I had been married for 8 years. I got married, running, knew everything, and then I got divorced. And then while this is going on, my dad was so manipulating my life and so controlling my life. And then going to counselors, and then the other side of the family, her side of the family, is telling me, your dad's a controller. And there was this really weird tension to manage, because I felt like God was calling me to be with my dad and to help the church, which proved to be the right thing, because over there, when my dad died unexpectedly at 56, I stepped in. But at the same time, everybody on the outside was saying, hey, you need to leave. And then at the same time, so what I really needed to do, and I didn't know at the time, and you need to write this down maybe, is I needed to set some healthy boundaries. Because my dad was such a controller, now I'm divorced, and I'm hurt, and I don't know what to do. So my dad's still controlling, and I know he's a problem. He's not the total problem. I'm the problem, because I'm allowing this. I'm enabling this. And I didn't draw a line. But now I don't know what to do. So the only thing I know to do to this controlling father is just to cut him off. Just forget it. I've never partied. I've never done anything wild. I've been at church my whole life. So I thought, just screw it. Let's do it. And so I went out and started running around town and having a good time. And just my dad's now freaking out, trying to get a hold of me. At first, I thought, I can't walk away from dad, because he'll really get mad. You don't like dad when he gets mad. So I made this hard cut just to cut him off. And now I'm living in a Baldwin apartment in a basement with nothing but me, my dog, or my cat, and my Harley. I didn't even have a dog. I lost that in the divorce. And now I'm there, and then I start kind of doing stupid stuff, and then one person introduced me to another person. Watch God work in all this. Then I go to Helen's, where this people are kind of partying, and I meet Nicole. Nicole's standing over there, and she just got off work. She was America's number one salesman in telecom, and she had a short skirt on that I thought was very attractive, and I started talking to her, and then now I start dating her, and then now I start introducing my dad back into my life again, and he starts controlling again. And he's like, you don't need to marry her. You screwed up the first time you got married, and I need to pick out your next wife. So I realized, no, we're not doing that, because dad wanted me to marry a girl from church, and there was only two girls at church, and I didn't think either one of them were pretty. Come on, I got to live with this girl. You know what I'm saying? Y'all following what I'm saying today? Come on, every campus, raise your hand if you follow me, okay? So now, my dad is not a problem, but he does have strong tendencies that is trying to control me. So a lot of my life I put on hold because of my dad. I'm not saying that I got divorced because of my dad, but I am saying that he was a contributing factor. And that my ex-wife didn't respect that at all because my dad is kind of controlling my life. And now I'm about 34, and my dad's still really in control. And my friends start starting churches. And I remember one guy, he started a church. He's got a couple hundred people coming. I'm like, man, I down deep, watch this, I have a desire to do that, but I know I can't do that because my dad would kill me. I got to work for him. He would say stuff to me like, you know, all the good stuff, but at the same time, like, hey, you couldn't make it without me. Thank God you're there. Whenever narcissistic tendencies, and I'm not saying a person's totally a narcissist because my dad wasn't, but he had tendencies to be a narcissist. And I put it on hold. And I remember one day, here I was 34 years old, and I go to St. Anthony's Hospital, and my dad's never been sick a day in his life, and then now they say, your dad is about to die. He's got about 30 days to live, and my dad dies, and now I'm thrown into this situation. Me and Nicole, I haven't been married very long, and we start working on the church. And I remember when I was begging God not to take my dad, and God didn't take my dad, the devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. But I remember my father speaking to me about my dad. And God told me, he said, when you're not in the will of God, you're in the way of God. And I have a lot of things for you to do, and I can't allow your dad to hold you back because you're going to build a great church and help thousands of people. Now, to me at that point, it didn't even make sense because there was only 180 people in the whole church, okay? So I couldn't see, and I'm saying that you can't see your preferred future. So when people try to hold you back and they get mad and you feel like this is what God called you to do, you got to let them get glad in the same pants they got mad in, because some people never mature beyond, this is factual, 8 years old. Talk to counselors, talk to therapists. Most people emotionally are about 8 years old. I've had days where I'm five. Come on, raise your hand. I've had days where I'm five. I still throw fits. I remember not too many years ago, Nicole and I and the family went to Destin, Florida, and we're on vacation, and she made me mad. I don't even know what she did. It's funny how upset you get, and you can't even remember the stuff you did. And I went outside on the porch. You know how they got one of those glass doors, and they're inside. I'm looking at the ocean, but I'm trying to make them pay because, you know, they got to deal with this. And so I'm throwing a tantrum out there. And then eventually I looked in about 40 minutes later. And 40 minutes when you're alone feeling sorry for yourself is a really long time. And I turned around, thought, they're not even paying attention. They were playing games. It's a game of Monopoly. This is going to go on for a day. And so I go inside, and they're like, oh, Nicole goes, oh, there you are. We were wondering where you are. And I'm like, my tantrum, you didn't see my show? But again, emotionally, I never made myself grow up. Instead of saying, hey, Nicole, can I talk to you a second? A while ago, you really hurt my feelings, and it made me feel this way. I know you didn't mean that, but it made me feel that way. And then she could go, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. And then we could have moved on. But my dad never did that. You could feel him. There was an attitude. And a lot of you today at all of our campuses, you're living with father wounds and mother wounds. And now the only thing you can do is continue to basically replicate that with your own kids. I was so not in control of my son in Florida. He was seven when me and Nicole got married. And he went to college and did a lot of stuff. And his dad in Dallas, great guy. I never mentioned preaching to Austin. I never mentioned church to Austin because I never wanted him to ever think that I thought that would be the perfect plan for his life, because I never wanted to have forced upon him. And preaching wasn't forced upon me, but the manipulation was. And I never brought it up until one day Austin told me, man, I feel like I'm called to preach and I'm supposed to do that. And I'm like, I was floored. I'm like, oh, wow. Well, I've built a lot of churches. Pick one. You know what I'm saying? We can do this together. But what I am saying is your kids, you love them. And your grandkids, you love them. And the best thing that you could ever give them is a healthy you. But you can't really give people a healthy you when you're beat down and suppressed because mom said you never, dad said you were bad, no matter how much you did, you know, and you tried to win and tried to impress people. Because here's the deal that people don't understand. These kids that you have, even adult kids, you know who they're performing for? They're performing for an audience of one. And if you happen to be that important person in their life, be like the prodigal that Jesus talked of and say, hey, I love you and you did a good job. Hey, go knock yourself out and do something stupid, okay? I love that. I told you a few weeks ago, the lady in California, she's like 90, and she came up to me in the coffee shop, and we're talking, and then when she left, she said, hey, if you get in any trouble while you're out here, give me a call. I'll come join you. I like that. Be in it together. Jesus exhibited this again. Remember the story of Judas? Jesus is having dinner with all these guys, and he knows that Judas is a traitor. He's going to betray him, and Jesus let him. I would at least have taken a group photo and been pointing for later, like, told you guys, I didn't want to say it, but you know, I was pointing. I knew it. Knew he was a bad guy, but God just let him. Let him hurt you. Let him leave you. By the way, if people leave you, their part of your play is over. And you can't super glue them back to you to make them love you. And then you continue to watch stories, listen to old voice memos, go down and watch videos of how great it was. And all you're doing is traumatizing yourself neurologically, bringing up bad feelings when you should say, you know what, God, I believe that you love me, and I believe that somebody will love me, and I'm going to grow in this. Come on, help me today. No more manipulation. 1 Peter 2:23, it says, when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. They're hurling all these insults at Jesus, and he let them. There's many people that love me, and there's a lot of people that love me. There's a whole group of people that don't like me, which surprises me. Because I usually even love them. Because I'm such a pleaser, I'm always trying to get the not likes or the not knows to like me. Because it fills my tank. And ultimately, it's about me. So many times, you are performing for somebody who may never, ever, even though they might even want to tell you, they can never tell you that a girl, that a boy. They just can't do it. And that's okay. It's not good, but it's okay. Because if your validation comes from a person, and not God, then you never can really be sure of who you are. So today, some people are going to like my sermon. I'm going to preach a bunch. I preached last night. I thought it was okay. Tried to stay up all night trying to communicate better. How can I say that better? I don't want to make my dad look bad, and I don't want to do this. How do I do it? And so today, at one point, I'm going to like one of my sermons. I'm going to like part. I wish I could take like all of them and like glue them together and go, now that was a doozy. But when I leave the stage and go to our city, and then I go to our city and come back here and leave the stage, and then I go back to our city again, I do everything that I do today, I have to trust the information and the content and go, I bet I helped somebody. And so my affirmation has to come from God. And some people will say, you're not a psychiatrist. You're not a psychologist. Why don't you stick to preaching, big guy? I can't have them in my mind. I gotta let them think that. Let them be that. Let yourself be who you are. And when my dad went to heaven, and I started the church, and people started coming, I started growing at 13% a week, and I started thinking, maybe I don't have to have my dad. Maybe somebody would want to hear me. Maybe I could communicate the way I communicate. And I remember when people didn't even know my dad, that was weird for me too, because he was such a staple in my life that he didn't know me. They didn't know me because of him. They knew me because of me. And nobody even asked me about my dad or mom anymore, to which I'm glad, but at the same time, it's weird. Y'all understand what I'm saying, where sometimes you still feel like a kid? Raise your hand if you're like, I'm 55, but I feel like a little kid sometimes. And I know kids are like, really, you do? Yes, we never really grew up. And by the way, we knew how to party. Raise your hand if you knew how to party. Your kids were like, well, you're not cool. Like, oh yeah, I was. Like, I invented a lot of sins that you're discovering. So Jesus said in John 6:66, it's a lot of sixes. After this, many of his disciples drew back, returned to their old associations, and no longer accompanied him. And he let them. In fact, he goes a step further, and Jesus said to the 12, will you also, does anybody else want to go? Anybody else want to leave? And I don't think he said it in a mean way, like, hey, you don't want, why don't you just screw it. Y'all can go. I don't care. No, he was just saying, I'm not going to say, please don't go. Please stay with me. I will become whoever you are. Who do you want me to be today? You got to give who God created you to be to the world. Whatever I am today. Some days I wear a suit. I bought this in New York last week. Ashton, my daughter, thought I looked cool. She said you look cool. So I thought, I want to bring it out again because maybe somebody else in their 20s would think I would look cool. And then some older person is going to be like, man, he dressed like a slob. Did he just wake up? Are those his pajamas? But I got to be me. And while I'm communicating, I can't try to be somebody else. I got to be me. And you, I'm talking to you right now. You were created for greatness. God called you to something good. There's a hole in the world that only you could fill. And when you do it under the glory of God. And if mom and dad or people or organizations or government officials or attorneys come against you, you go, you know what? I'm going to do what's right because it's right. I'm going to do my best to do it right. And I'm going to find my affirmation from him, not from them. From him, not from them. Go ahead. Come on. Give the Lord a hand today. Here's some points I like from the book, some strong points. You can't control other people. Let them misunderstand you. Let them judge you. Let them leave. Let them be who they are. Let them reject your help. Let them take the credit. Don't you hate that at work? You're like, that was my idea. Let them gossip. Let them walk their own path. Let them stay stuck. It's a hard thing to do, especially if you're a parent and you love people. And your kids come to you and they start telling you about a situation. And immediately you want to fix it because you're older and you know the answer. Here's something that helps a lot when you just ask a person, are you just telling me this because you want me to hear or do you want me to talk into that? Asking people's permission before you fix it. Because as a preacher, oftentimes I hate it when people get up and say, well, you don't want you to come to church and be like me. I've got it all together. Don't you just kind of turn you off like, okay, you know, surely there's a chink in your armor somewhere. I like authenticity. I say at Faith Church, we're like the Whole Foods of grocery stores in the church world. It's this non-genetically modified gospel that I am a sinner who's still prone to sin, who gets up every day and says, God, help me do this. And I'm so glad that God chose you to come to the church because I feel like that you guys feel encouraged because you go, man, I'm not half as screwed up as he is, man. He needs therapy, to which I do and have. And God still uses me in spite of me. So when people act in ways that you don't agree with, let them. At our church, we have all different people that come to the church and they say, hey, I'm married to this kind of person, or I am this kind of way, or sexually I'm that way, or this is that way. I never judge people because of their sin. Just because, I love this, just because people sin differently than you, doesn't make your sin, because my sin's always a 1 and yours is an 8 or a 10. Right? So it's like, that's a 5. That's a 4. We do that. We judge sin. Sin is sin. So just because somebody might be this way or be that way, I'm not condoning it. But I never want to condemn it. Because Jesus, he said, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. And I've found the only way that you can go and sin no more is if you don't feel like something's wrong with you and something's bad with you. Here's the fact. We're all frail. We're all human. And I don't know what you went through. Somebody told me last night that they're please pray for my best friend. The dad comes in and sexually molests her every night. What do you do in that situation? I hear stuff. First thing I ask is how old? Because if it's a child, I want to protect it. But this is, sometimes people can be in a scenario to where it's not a child, but they've been so controlled and their mind is so messed up. You think, my God, you're old enough. Just walk out. But you don't know what people go through. You don't know the situation they're in. So the best thing we can do is just love the heck out of everybody and try to bring them to church and try to get them in a group and try to get them to sit next to you. Are you hearing me today? Let's go love the heck out of people. Because if they're as jacked up as we're jacked up, then we can all come together and say, God, help us. Help me, help you. Let them. Letting go is kind of tough and forgiving. There's a big conference this week, our women's conference, and there's a speaker that you can't get, Sarah Jakes. You just can't get her anymore. She's crazy how iconic she is. But she's friends with Nicole, so she's coming. But as popular as Mel is, Mel asked her to be on her podcast, and I got a snippet I want to show you. Check this out with Sarah.
How do you begin the process of sitting with yourself? How do you learn how to forgive yourself?
It starts with intention. I sat with myself. I will say those 10 years, I was sitting with myself, but I was sitting with myself, punishing myself. How could you be so stupid? You made the biggest mistake. No one's ever going to want you. Sometimes we are sitting with ourselves, but how we are sitting with ourselves is why we can't heal. You can't want to heal and punish yourself at the same time. To repeat the words that other people have spoken over you that were negative, having it replay in your mind over and over again while you sit with yourself will never bring you to a place of healing.
What I want to point out there is this. I can still hear neurologically and probably physiologically certain things that my dad said to me of why I can't and why I never. I remember one time I built a barn because me and Nicole were successful. And I worked with Dad, but at the same time, I did all kinds of other things. And I became a millionaire at 34 in spite of my dad on that. And I built this big barn. And it was probably, you know, half the size of this whole auditorium. And it had a riding arena and a little car shop. And it had everything. And my dad came and said, what are you thinking? This is crazy. You borrowed the money for this? The whole world's coming to an end. Because he really did think it, because his dad thought it. Because my grandfather went through the Great Depression and he really didn't go through. He got stuck in it. And so my dad was thinking that way. And now I thought, man, what am I doing? So then when it came time to buy Earth City and it came time to buy these buildings, I could hear my dad saying, what in the world are you doing? The world's coming to an end. And then I kept building more churches because more lives need to be changed. And then there at Fairview Heights, we bought that church. And then what was supposed to be, you know, $6 million ended up being $13 million. And then in Florida, the church that we just built and building down there right now was supposed to be like $3 or $4 million. And then because of everything that happened in the world now, it ends up being like $9 million. And I can hear my dad going, the world's coming to an end. And then I go, you know what? We're so deep in debt now, screw it. Where do I sign right here? And where do I sign right here? Because where God guides, he provides. Come on, if it's God's will, it's God's bill. And my dad, he didn't mean anything bad by it, but that's still replaying in my head. And the reason I said that is when you sit by yourself, sometimes you have to have the TV on just because you don't want to hear what you have to say. You turn the radio on, you sleep with the TV on, and I mean, whatever works for you, but I'm just saying at some point in your life, I want you to get involved in church and rewire your mind. Come in and start singing these songs. I have a hope and a future. I know who I am. You hear that a lot. I know who I am. I am loved by you. Loved by you. It's really hot. I am loved by you. I am accepted. Because you'll have to sing that like 9,000 times because you were told, without me, you don't have a hope in the future. You never felt accepted. And you never felt loved. And as long as I'm alive, which I hope is a long time, I want to try to build a church that lets everybody come in and feel loved and accepted and sing it to them as many times as we have to say, you're beautiful, you're called for more. I want to keep building churches. How about you? I want to keep changing lives. I want to do my part, and you do your part, and you join the dream team, and you go through growth track, and for God's sakes, I'm tired of begging you to fill out the gold card. I've got to get a hold of you. When that devastating tornado hit St. Louis, we called the gold cards and said help, because FEMA's still not there. The Red Cross wasn't there. But by the time I called everybody, When it happened on Friday, on Saturday, I started crying when I drove down the street. And there were hundreds and hundreds of red shirts, and they were picking up poles and helping people get up. And we stayed down there the whole time. Fill out the gold card. Because we can clap about it all day long. But what are we going to do about it? Fairview Heights, Weldon, Ferguson, everybody. I wish I could go. In fact, this morning I was thinking about it. I thought, man, I wish I could go to Fairview. I wish I could go to Weldon. Some of you I've never met. It so saddens my heart, but I feel connected to you. Just because we don't sit down and have lunch or we don't hang doesn't mean that our campus pastors and Casper and Nia and Ryan and Phil and everybody in Florida and Austin and Gabe and all the, you know, and Bree and everybody, they love you. And I pray with them and pray for you. And I promise you the rest of your life, if you'll let them go, if you'll let the pressure go, if you'll let them leave, don't call them back, don't stalk them, quit doing this on Facebook and Instagram. Have you ever looked at pictures and go, they're together? I know all of those people. They're not being honest with me. Anybody ever zoomed in? And then now you go on a stalk and you're like, well, I'm going to go over there and see if they posted about it. Well, they posted about it. They're all at a flow trip together and they didn't invite me. How is that possible? Well, I'm a workaholic, so I never really invested in the relationship anymore. I never called them. And they all work together, and they live on the same street. Of course, so let them. Let them go have fun. And then let them, because you know, I've looked at pictures, and I was fine before I looked at it. They've been on the trip for 3 days, and I was fine. But now that I know that they're on the trip, I'm like, screw them. What did I ever do? Raise your hand if you identify what I'm saying. We keep mentally torturing ourselves. Get the book, Let Them. And then next week, if it's okay, I want to kind of pick up where we left off because I've got pages of notes. If it helps you, raise your hand, every campus today. Father, I pray right now for every woman, every boy, every girl. God, that your Holy Spirit would move in and out every aisle and up and down every row. God, online, touch those people who are just even home because they can't muster up the courage because I hear it all the time. I have an eating disorder. And now I feel ashamed of myself. I don't even have clothes that fit. And so I watch online. God, may they find the courage and the love and the acceptance to forgive other people and to forgive themselves. God, I believe today in this first day of June that you will touch their heart and their soul. And God, we'll get a realization that you love us so much that you died for us. And God, heal every wound and every hurt and every heart. God, today as I continue to preach, may I continue to communicate the gospel of love and acceptance. And God, next week, may every person at the sound of my voice be compelled to bring a friend. Don't just invite a friend, bring a friend for the therapeutic benefit and the life change. In Christ's name we pray, and everybody said amen. Hey, I want to show a video that's going to freak you out today. It's so cool. It's one of the coolest moments of my life and of our church. I'm so proud. You won't even believe what we did. We stayed on the streets. In fact, we've put on hold all of our giving campaign. We do have some things going on with the all the buildings, you know, all that stuff, the capital campaign, but we just kind of put that on hold, and we've been spending so much money downtown helping people that can't help themselves, and you're gonna love this story. Check it out.